Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is my good friend and Tribune colleague, Ted Gregory. As I said earlier, probably the best all-around reporter at the paper. That comes with the jack-of-all-trades kind of general assignment title.
I'm bringing donuts right after the break.
You'll pay for this, trust me. But Ted's the author of a new book, and it's called Mary Jane's Ghost. And it's really a fascinating story about a double homicide of a young couple down in Oregon, Illinois, which is south of Rockford on Route 2 along the Rock River. And actually, Ted, thank you for joining me this morning.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. The place looks really festive.
Indeed, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Even this early on a Sunday morning, right?
I know.
But I worked for a couple of years at the Rockford Register Star.
All right, great.
And so I was very familiar with Oregon the River Road, Route 2.
Beautiful little stretch of roadway there.
The Black Hawk statue.
Right, love that.
That's what I call it, is the Black Hawk
statue. Right.
It's actually the Eternal Indian.
That's right.
So it was great kind of catching up on a little bit of history, but this is history that goes back 70 years.
Right.
And the book is filled, it's a fact book.
Yeah.
But some of these characters almost sound fictional. And I want you to go back to how you got this letter.
Right.
And from someone who was very interested in the June 1948 deaths of Mary Jane Reed and Stanley Skridla on a lover's lane.
Yeah, right. So as you know, Rick, we've worked at the Tribune for a long time, and I'm what they call a general assignment reporter, which means I do a little bit of everything.
The jack of all trades.
Right. And I cover local politics, and I covered Hurricane Katrina, and I've written travel stories, and I've written editorials for the Chicago Tribune.
Political stories.
That's in political stories, right. Yeah, we back in 96 was the great governor's race, right? We had a lot of fun with that one. And it's sort of a little bit of a niche that I've carved out for myself is that I'm the guy who oftentimes goes out to small towns, rural communities, and writes stories about them.
And I'm jealous because it's such an interesting beat to be able to get out of the normal kind of stuff, to be able and find these very interesting features that tell stories about parts of Illinois that people, we get so focused up here. I mean, my time spent working downstate, mm-hmm. I think, was invaluable to mm-hmm. what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't mean to be rude for us folks here in Chicagoland, but, you start looking at DeKalb as no man's land kind of thing.
Right. Well, and it's funny because over the years as I was doing this these stories, well outside of Chicago, I got to appreciate the state in a really different way. I got to see the state, which is my home state. I was born in Chicago and raised here. As the most American place in the United States, I really feel like it is. And if you take a look at demographic analysis of it, it shows up time after time after time, but also historically and culturally. Illinois was settled from the north by abolitionists that were from New York and New England, and from the south by plantation owners from Kentucky and Tennessee. So it's a really, in that role as a guy who gets out and around throughout the entire state, you really get an appreciation for, it sounds weird, but how cool Illinois is. So anyway, to get back to your first question, in that role as general assignment reporter, I came to the office one day and there was a fat envelope on my desk. And in it was, among many things, was a letter that was written from Oregon, Illinois, which for folks who don't know where it is, if you get on North Avenue in Chicago and you go 100 miles west, you'll get to the Rock River, which is a very scenic place, and that's where Oregon, Illinois is. It's right on the Rock River, surrounded by 5,000 acres of state parks and forests. It's a very scenic area because it's got a lot of bluffs and rock formations. It's got a very interesting history. But the letter was written by Mike Arians, who is a slightly eccentric fellow, a former insurance fraud investigator and a dinner theater producer who moved.
Bar owner.
Yeah, and, right. He moves to Oregon in the mid to late 90s, opens a restaurant, gets elected mayor, and then becomes obsessed with this crime that we mentioned earlier, the Mary Jane Reed Stanley Skridla crime, which is, you know, a young couple. She was 17 years old from Oregon, kind of from the wrong side of the river in Oregon. And then he was 28 years old, and he was from Rockford, and about 40 miles north of Oregon. They met at the telephone company. She was a telephone operator. He was a telephone lineman. They set up a date one night. Late, after she got off of work, they went to a few establishments in and around Oregon, wound up in Lover's Lane, doing what I think lovers would do on a Lover's Lane, young people would do on a Lover's Lane, and then someone approaches the car, or maybe several people approach the car, and they either pull Stanley out or Stanley confronts them. Stanley is shot several times, killed, his body is dragged to the side of the road, Mary Jane is kidnapped. That event set in motion a huge manhunt, woman hunt, I guess you'd call it, a lot of coverage, front page news, including from our own Chicago Tribune, and Mary Jane can't be found. She's not found for one day, not 2 days, not 3 days. On the fourth day, her body is found about a mile away in a roadside ditch that her father passed by on work, on his way to and from work every day. And she's partially clothed. It's unclear if she was shot, where she was shot. But anyway, this, of course, really inflames the situation. More attention, news coverage from Maine to California in the newspapers. And over time, even though they interview and interrogate a bunch of people, they don't solve it. They never solve the case, and it sort of fades from consciousness. Fast forward 50 years, Mike Arians moves to town. He becomes obsessed with it. He comes up with a very scandalous theory, which we can talk about, and he reaches out to the Chicago Tribune for help. That's the letter that lands on my desk.
And that was how long ago when you got that letter?
That was in 2003.
Okay. And when I kind of, because we get those kinds of letters all the time.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
And sometimes you just kind of go, this is way over the deep end here.
Uh-huh.
And kind of in your initial conversations with Mike Arians,
right.
And obviously he has this great obsession.
Yes, yes, yeah.
For Mary Jane Reed.
Right, right.
That's kind of when I probably would have pulled the plug out of this thing.
See, it used to be more fun than this. But
didn't we all?
Right, right. Yeah, time has a way of wearing down, just bringing out the fun of us. You know, just like a rag. But yeah. So when I got the letter, and then it included a bunch of old newspaper clips, and I love old newspaper clippings. You know, there's really something so much fun reading them, interesting. And he included, of course, newspaper clippings all about the crime, including some from the Chicago Tribune. So I was very intrigued by the story and just the setting and, you know, thinking about this crime that occurred in 1948, still unsolved. And so, you know, the first thing that we do oftentimes when we get a letter like this is we're trying to determine if the person who's writing this letter is a nut, right? So I give him a call. And he wasn't a nut. He was very open, very candid, answered any questions I wanted, talked for as long as I wanted. You know, he was a former mayor. He had not won his reelection bid, but he was a former mayor.
He'd been in the public spotlight.
Right. He was a county board member in Kane County for a number of years. So I thought, well, what the heck? You know, this sounds pretty cool. So I went out there and of course explored a little more his belief that Mary Jane's ghost inhabits his roadhouse, and the roadhouse is 100 years old or so. It's a real old kind of a rich in character place. And so when I went out there, he was just as I thought he would be on the phone. I mean, he really had this commitment to not only to Mary Jane and you know, the relationship he had with, quote unquote, her ghost, which is sort of intriguing, but I think he felt that he was standing up for someone who hadn't been stood up for, you know, who was silent in all this, which is Mary Jane. And her family had one remaining sibling who was 6 years old at the time, her littlest brother, Warren. And Mike was very devoted to him over all these years, and I think that was part of it. And the notion that Mike's own background is kind of interesting. You know, he was kind of a kid who was dismissed and cast aside quite a bit. So there was all these factors that were sort of coming together that were really intriguing to me, and so I pursued it from there, and pursued it for 16 or 17 years.
And we'll talk about that pursuit when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Ted Gregory, my colleague at the Tribune, and author of Mary Jane's Ghost. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, speaking with my good friend Ted Gregory, author of Mary Jane's Ghost. This is a story. It's a book about a journey, and it's a journey of those 70 years since these murders occurred. But it's also a journey about newspapering.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I wanted to do with the book was make it something broader and deeper than your straight true crime narrative, because the case itself felt like it was more than that. And as I was following the case over all these years, and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do with it, whether I was going to write a book about it or not, but when I finally realized, sort of got my head around what kind of a book it could be, I thought it would be really interesting and fulfilling from my perspective, and kind of creatively challenging, to talk about the case, and as I followed the case, what was going on in our own existence as a newspaper at the Chicago Tribune. And so I thought that that would help illustrate what it was like over those 13 years, and then what my life was like, and as a way sort of representative of the newspaper industry in general, and the state of journalism, and our need for stories, all of those themes I explore as I go about my journey as a newspaper reporter. So the main narrative is this. Me following this case and sort of circling back on it, but I also weave in other stories throughout Illinois, this most American place, into the book. So you'll see stories about the restoration of the tallest, most heinous statue of
Abraham
Lincoln. Heinous Abe. You'll read about the infestation, the invasion of flying Asian carp on the Illinois River. You'll read about a siege where 22 coal miners were slaughtered in Heron, Illinois, in 1922, and then come back to the main narrative throughout the story. So that's kind of how I structured it. It turned out the way I wanted it to, and it's been a really interesting experience to have it out and about in the world.
In doing the research on this, and it was, I mean, basically, this is 13 years going back and forth to Oregon.
Yep.
Looking to justify it for the Tribune editors.
Right. Don't say that. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, because there were twists and turns.
Absolutely.
That occurred.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a couple of really big ones.
Yes.
Right.
So, I mean, but as much as, you know, Mike Arians was obsessed, including a mannequin.
Oh, yes.
In the Roadhouse Bar.
Right. So, should I tell that story?
Well, that's where I would kind of say, okay, good luck, and I'm out of here.
So, the first trip that I went out there, after I had a phone conversation with Mike and realized that, he's a sane person, a little eccentric, but a little eccentric is always good for these kinds of stories, I think. I drove out there on a July afternoon. Sweltering hot, you know, those great July afternoons here in Illinois. The Roadhouse had not opened for the day, so it was kind of closed and, dark and closed and cool. So we talked for a little bit. Mike and I talked for a little bit, and then he took me for a little tour around the place. And so we turn a corner and we get into kind of the main lounge. It's a really interesting place, the Roadhouse. I'd highly recommend people going out there just to check it out. So we turn a corner and we get into the main lounge, and he pauses and looks up and says, "She was a beautiful young woman." And I'm looking at him, and I'm not really sure what he's saying, but I cast my eyes up into the balcony, and in the balcony of this restaurant with a light on it is a mannequin dressed up as Mary Jane Reed. And at that moment...
yeah, at that moment is when I turn around and walk out of the place.
At that moment, I felt this, something like a chill, you know, the proverbial chill up the spine and over my shoulders and kind of settle somewhere in my ear canal. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a pretty interesting little ride that I'm going to have today. So that's
and it was more than just today.
Oh, yeah.
A long ride.
Over 13 years, yeah, with all sorts of twists and turns. And, yeah, it's been really, it was a really, really interesting case for me.
And, you know, through this, too, you know, allegations of cover-up.
Yes.
The fact that no autopsy was done.
Right, right.
A scant police file.
Yeah.
And also the issue of small townness. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, when you mentioned earlier in the book about Mary Jane Reed coming from, like, the wrong side of the tracks, the wrong side of the river. I've been to Oregon. It's like, I didn't think it was big enough that there could be a wrong, you know.
Right.
But it's absolutely true.
Yeah, definitely. Sandtown was called.
But you get that sense of, even 70 years later, no one wanted to talk about this. No one wanted to resurrect the past.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I get it, and I'm deferential to that, you know, people felt that leave the dead alone, that they felt that it was, this bringing up this case again and again was smearing the community. My feeling is that, you know, our history is our history, and to try to explore it in an unbiased, a fair way, to try to get to the truth is a healthy thing for us, one way or the other. However it turns out, I think we become stronger, fuller people, better informed about who we are. So, as deferential as I was to those folks, it's a conservative community. I felt that it was important to at least pursue the truth.
Well, as you close the book, if I may quote, "The search for the truth, the courage to face and accept it as our own, the value in trying to gain deeper understanding, that's the noble journey." Ted Gregory, the book is a great journey, I have to tell you. Mary Jane's Ghost, University of Iowa Press.
Right.
We'll have a link to the on our website and our Facebook page.
That's great.
Ted, thank you so much.
Oh, I really appreciate it. It was really fun having the conversation. Thank you so much.